All right. So hello and welcome to everybody who's joining us tonight for week 7 of the Hemingway's Poetry Series. So this week and 2 more weeks, and then we'll be looking forward to 2023. So we really appreciate everybody who's been joining us for most of these, if not all of these. We appreciate all the poets. We appreciate you, Chris and Joan, for doing this with us. And this week, we're really excited to hear poetry from Heather McNarr, Richard St. John, Angel Ellis, Daniel Obisiorlu, and Don Wentworth. So quick round of applause for these people. So for those of you, everybody knows my spiel, everybody knows who I am, but there are some new faces, there are some new names on the live stream, which is super exciting. We're always really thrilled to welcome new folks into the store. So for those of you who are not familiar with White Whale or who are joining us virtually, I'm Anna, the events director at White Whale Bookstore. We're a family-owned general interest independent store in the Bloomfield neighborhood of Pittsburgh. Our store motto is conversation, community, and culture, and we strive to be a home for book lovers. Our events programming features local, national, and international writers and translators reading, discussing, and celebrating literature of all genres and for all ages. So I am going to, normally I talk about a couple of events at this point. I'm just going to talk about one. I'm going to tell you about Christmas in July, which we are going to do on July 23rd. I was pushing for July 25th, but that's a Monday, which is a weird day to celebrate anything, I think. July 23rd, Saturday. So it's going to be all day at the store. We're changing our hours to 10 to 7, and those will be our hours going forward. I know they've changed a bunch in the past couple of months. And it's one of Ad's biggest dreams is Christmas in July. So we're going to throw on a 600 song Christmas playlist. We're going to have holiday rom-coms, and we're going to have one day only wintery cafe drink specials. We're going to have an ugly apparel, Christmas apparel contest at 2 p.m. We'll have holiday read recommendations, raffle, like I think Indie Bookstore Day or Small Business Saturday. And we're just doing it Christmassy on a very hot day. And then that night, there's also not related, a poetry reading with Johnny Randhawa at 7 p.m. And that's to celebrate their debut collection, Time Regime, which we have on a table over there. Amanda Tian and Alma Levon Rice will be joining them for the reading. And last note about that day, it'll be when we debut our partnership with Mindful Brewing. You might have noticed the taps over there. We will have beer at White Whale. So we won't be able to have it ongoing as of the 23rd, but Mindful will be popping up on that day so you can sample some of the stuff we will have. So all really exciting stuff on the 23rd. Definitely mark your calendar. Some notes about how tonight's gonna go. We're currently live streaming. So hello and thank you to everybody who's here. We're really grateful for everybody who's joining us virtually and physically. For folks who are here physically, we do ask that you keep your mask on at all times. The authors will only remove their masks to speak here at the mic. As I'm doing right now. The restrooms are behind me. I ask that you hold off on heading back there if you can, just so it's a little bit less distracting to live streaming and the readers. But Althea says, you know your body, like you do what you need to do. The door at the back of the cafe here is locked just so it's easier for me to check back cards on the other side. I'm the only person working that tonight, but the bolt's right on the door. So if at the end of the night, you're like, I'm going out this door, go for it, flip the bolt. And we have copies of a lot of the readers' books in stock. So they'll be over with me. You can check them out. You can purchase them. And feel free to hang out at the end of the night and browse and purchase other books. Your support of the store is what makes free events like these possible. So that's all for me. I will turn it over to Chris and Joan. And yeah, I'm excited to hear everybody. Thank you for being here.
Thanks. Thanks to Anna and to White Whale and Halsey, not here tonight. We really couldn't do the Hemingway series without them right now. World events seem to have kicked us out of our bar. White Whale really, they saved us last season and this season, and really please when this is over, support White Whale, buy some books, check things out. I'm excited about these taps over here. I'm going to check those out myself, see if maybe they're working. I don't know. Just hang out over there. So yeah, thanks for coming tonight. Thanks for everybody tuning in on the live stream. So my wife and I, we had a new child in May. She's 2 months old now, and she's just started that baby phase of smiling at us that is probably not gas. I mean, there's a lot of gas. She is the hardiest child I've ever encountered, but she is smiling and playing with us. And actually, before I left the house to come here, she was really like engaged with me in a really intense smile-a-thon, which was pretty cool. She's a complete mystery to me. Our first child was too. I mean, I know them. I think I have a pretty good handle on who they are. But they're still, who are they going to become? What are their lives going to be like? How similar, how different to my life will they be? Am I going to be one of those parents like, well, it's not how we did it, but you go be you. I don't know. It's you just don't know what's going to happen with a child. That's my sum total of knowledge gained from having two children. You just don't know. Even when you know, you just don't know. That Little Beast by Mary Oliver. That pretty little beast, a poem, has a mind of its own. Sometimes I want to crave apples, but it wants red meat. Sometimes I want to walk peacefully on the shore, and it wants to take off all of its clothes and dive in. Sometimes I want to use small words and make them important. And it starts shouting the dictionary, the opportunities. Sometimes I want to sum up and give thanks, putting things in order. And it starts dancing around the room on its four furry legs, laughing and calling me outrageous. But sometimes, when I'm thinking of you, and no doubt smiling, it sits down quietly, one paw under its chin, and just listens. When you're writing a poem, and this is why, personally, I do write poems, I don't know where they're going to go. They're a mystery. Just start them off with a thought, a line, a sentence, a remembrance, a person that you love, a person that you don't love. And they just go off on their own and do whatever the fuck they want to. You can't control it. I mean, you can try to control it, but those are just bad poems. The point for me, I think, and for a lot of poets, most poets probably, is the mystery. What is going to happen now? I know where it started. I know why it started, but I have no idea what its life is going to be. All of our poets in this series engage in that experiment. I'm going to set a life out into the world. And make no mistake, when you put art into the world, it has a life of its own. It is its own entity. You don't get to say what it is once you let it go. Just like children. And it's a hard thing to let go of. And it's a hard thing to understand. even when you think you know it perfectly. It will always, ideally, surprise you. So thank you for joining us tonight with these very, very fine poets. We're excited about this. This is a fantastic group of writers. Their work consistently surprises. And it's just a lovely thing to witness. And I'm glad you're here tonight to do that. So thank you. I will lower this for Joan this time.
Hi, everybody. Great to see you here tonight. And hi to everybody in the Zoom world. And I know there are a lot of you tonight, so that's great. And also, this whole series, tonight's reading, and in fact, the whole series is a lot of it's already posted. The last 11 years are posted. And this will be posted in a couple of weeks, a week or so. So you can hear, you may really want to go back and hear tonight again, even if you are here. A big thank you to Wywell. A big thank you to Chris Collins. So happy to be doing co-curating with Chris. And a shout out to Chris, who has a new book coming out called Roundabout Trace. Yay! From Kung Fu Treachery, which is a very interesting name for a press. What? Sorry, and very interesting logo. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that book. We're really lucky to have five really remarkable and gifted and great poets here tonight. And I will just say, in case I should I forget, that this actually is week 6. And next week will be week 7. And mark your calendars, because week 7 will involve Mantis, Bob Pagic, Judith Robinson, Megan Tutelo, and Anastasia Walker. And you will not want to miss that. And I just mark your calendar. That's going to be the 26th of July. So I think Heather McNauer has read for us over the years that I've maybe 3 or 4 times. Yeah, it is so great to have her back. And it's always just fun to see her bio change, because there's all this new work that's come out. Heather McNauer is the author of 4 poetry collections and is the inaugural winner of the 2021 Southern Humanities Editors Chapbook Prize for Fiction for her story collection, States of Emergency. She teaches at Chatham University, where she is nonfiction editor of Fourth River, and we're thrilled to have her here tonight. And we got her between vacation times. So please welcome Heather McNauer. Hey, everybody. I think there's going to be a lot of this. Up, down. I'll take this off when I surmise everything's calmed down around there. 5, 4, 3. Thanks for coming. I'm pretty rusty. I feel like I don't think the last time I read this with you all for Hemingway's, but it kind of feels that way. You know, that was a while ago. So
yeah.
Go poetry. Here we are. I'm going to read 4 poems tonight. The first is about a particular kind of public codependence one might experience. If you're familiar, if you have this too, you'll recognize it right away. If you don't, see, I'd love to chat because you've been spared. Okay, at the reading of a famous homosexual poet, I fret over the comfort of Terence, who unfolds across the aisle to my right. I fret over the comfort of Tim, one row in front on my left. And I fret over the comfort of Dylan and Corey behind me, third row from the back. I've brought us here. My students, my boys, their approval, a wig I wear. In his jeans, Oxford shirt, and Yankees cap, D.A. Powell works undercover, a suburban dad, come to penetrate third base, come to perpetrate some poetry, come to play ball and shove us face first, dick down in the dirt. I miss the whole thing with my fretting. Some of you were there that night. I'm sure I fretted over your comfort too. It's a poem called You Wouldn't Do It. You wouldn't do it. In spite of the bed, the creek bed that is, poured out for us like a new planet. Bony and staring, water yet to be discovered. We had yet to be discovered. Small horses escaped. Pooling over us was the homespun sweater of night. Into this I followed. You, who would not slow, turn, do it. Who would not stop abruptly, that I might crash land there. We were Capricorns, and so you would not do it, but would instead plunder the night in slow circles, me following and cautioning, afraid of the dark and afraid of wasting it. At the mouth of the field, we were fishtailed goats, plodding and slick from all the everything but touching. We were women, and you would not do it in spite of the clearing before us. I used to read like my big, loud poems, my big performative poems. We've all come back differently, right? From the pandemic. I cannot muster people. So a quieter McNarr maybe this evening. Vanilla Sky, which is a movie some of you might remember from about 20 years back. Vanilla Sky. The theater, a strobing white tabernacle, the only sign of life for miles. We'd entered in dusk's low-hanging halo and were returned days later, the world woolen over with stars. The Jetta's doors popped the stillness, sucking a seal around us. Your cigarette, a tiny crackling Mars, roving your lips as you drove. White car, black leather, a black road at night. It was January 2nd. 2002. I remember because it was the first time I was happy this century. I'd stopped smoking by then and drinking. I was a new person with lots to say about Penelope and Tom, always roused by couples who could match us. It had been 6 months since our last makeout with those girls in Gowanus, remember? The hot Israeli with the British accent. Birds, she called us, and her disagreeable Long Island girlfriend who whispered, hit me, and we got the hell out of there, howling, thrilled to be us. Sarah, I am still in that car with you, hurtling down Vestal after my first sober movie, marveling at the clear, simple night, my lover at the wheel, your rangy, magnificent arms in that pea coat we couldn't afford, but bought anyway. Best money ever spent. Thank you. That's my favorite poem I ever wrote. The Covenant. The thing is, I wanted anchovies. The only reason to go to Drew's on Ardmore is the Greek salad with anchovies. But in March, I'd met someone, a vegetarian, and we had what we fondly referred to as the covenant. She didn't drink around me, and I didn't eat meat in front of her. Dear God, how on earth do we get ourselves into these things and out of them and back into them over and over and over until all at once you're 40? Now I am so close to 50, it's just crazy. Until all at once you're 40 and still haven't learned Spanish or how to play the guitar or do a headstand, which are the first three things I'm always going to do this time for real when I break up with someone. I am going once and for all to be alone and do these things. There's this part in Howard's End when Tibby wonders at the quote unquote haycocks people make of their lives. Well, here I was at Drew's in a haycock, by which I mean another relationship with a perfectly good, gorgeous woman whose only flaw was she was available and a grown-up with a job and her own home. And this, ultimately, this would not do. It was July now, and we'd been together for enough months that our covenant, so reverent and tender in April, suddenly sitting there in Drew's, became a noose. The more I thought about that salad without anchovies on it, the worse my neck broke out in hives, inflamed and strangling. First of all, why would you order salad at a restaurant if not for the bacon or anchovies or steak and french fries? Second, fish is not an animal. But we talked about this a lot, something about souls and eyes. The truth is, I really wanted those anchovies. I wanted them more than I wanted her methodical, God-restoring tongue each weekend. More than I wanted her ridiculous granite abs under my palm, her triceps like pulleys in my hands, her sad brown eyes. More than Sundays with Imogen Heap in the red Jetta when she'd shift left-handed to keep her right hard on my thigh, and we'd blast the Fort Pitt tunnel to materialize, a miracle, giddy and dazed. On the other side. Thank you.
Boy, I love that. That's fun. Yeah. About almost 20 years ago, I was in a workshop with Michael Worster, and I was attempting to write, I believe, for the first time in about 40 years, maybe 30 years. And let's not make it worse than it is. And I was trying to write this kind of poem that interweaves history and some personal material, and it was pretty pathetic. And Michael said to me, great wisdom, he said, I think you ought to talk to Rick St. John. I mean, he knows how to write this kind of poem. Okay. And so I did, which was one of the, you know, I'm very proud of myself for doing that. And I've been lucky enough to be friends with Rick ever since. And I've learned a great deal about poetry from reading Rick's work. And he's a dear friend. And so Rick St. John's newest book of poetry is Book of Entangled Souls, which has just come out. Yay. He's the author of The Pure Inconstancy of Grace, published by Trim Estate, and first runner-up for the T.S. Eliot Prize.
on each perspective name from Truman State, and a shrine, which is a chapel, came out in 2011. Rick, as some of you know, lives in Pittsburgh. His wife is an amazing world-class birder. Okay, she knows everything about birds. And he has been involved in wonderful initiatives all over Pittsburgh, trying to bring people together in a variety of ways. And you really ought to look up his website, RickSt.JohnPoet.com. But I should just let him read his poems, which I'm about to do. Please welcome Richard St. John.
Thanks to all of you for coming out, both on Zoom and in person. And I want to especially thank Joan and Chris and White Whale for bringing the five of us together to read. It really is a delight. And as Joan said in the introduction, I've got a new book out. And just to give you at least a very hazy sense of the arc of the collection, I'm going to read one poem from each of its three sections. And the first section is loosely about the connections and complicities that we all share. And because, as Tip O'Neill once famously said, all politics is local, I'm going to start with a neighborhood poem, and it's called Carthage. And it starts with an epigraph from Confessions of St. Augustine. To Carthage I came, I loved not yet. And out of a deep-seated want, I hated myself. Carthage. How did they begin? The tragic Punic wars of her front stoops. Was it the raving messages on our machine accusing us of sex and dirt? The day she drove the Oldsmobile from her garage and double parked us in and wouldn't move? Her shouting matches with her stoop-backed mom, her mother's bruised brown arms, or something in their cellar years before, the dark, the damp, the coal grit in her hair. Now she lives alone, and we pretend she isn't there. Is it true she's banned from shopping at our grocery store? Why did she hack her lilac to a branchy stump, pointing skyward like a crippled hand? Why do we watch and watch behind our sunroom blind? Each day, all fall, ragged squads of leaves drift off across the chain link fence that separates our yards. She picks them up slowly. One by one. We never speak. I only rarely wave. Today, heading to a march for refugees, I ask myself, who is my neighbor? Irene, of course, whose name means peace. She's torn out the grass from the little strip between her sidewalk and the street. What is she doing? Oh, I'm sorry. She's torn out the grass from the little strip between her sidewalk and the street and filled it with small white gravel chips. What is she doing? Stomping, stomping, stomping them down like salt into that wounded patch of ground. What am I doing? Glancing away and hurrying to step around. The second section of the book is kind of about the perplexities and entanglements of individual souls, myself being a case in point, And this poem captures some perplexities from my own childhood. It's kind of a shaggy dog story. There's even a dog in it about a family trip, road trip across the country. But as the epigraph hints, it's kind of also a poem of shadowy prophecies. It's called The Down to Disneyland. And it starts with an epigraph from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching. Were I sufficiently wise, I would follow the great way and only fear going astray. The Tao to Disneyland. On the way west, 10,000 scenes arose, then disappeared in the rearview mirror. We didn't know the ice caps were melting or that the cities would burn in 68. Everything was new and white and waiting. My sister, 7, sprawled across the station wagon's cloth blank back seat. I was 5 and further back, trapped with the steaming, snoring body of our dog. Up front, our mom doled out ice cubes and wax paper sandwiches. My father crossed the double line to pass by breathless inches every car we caught. He smoked Chesterfields, stubbed them in the dashboard's fold-down cup, hung his sunburned arm outside, palm open to the rushing air. On days we didn't camp, we watched for motel signs that advertised a pool. I don't remember swimming much, just the chugging ice machines, our plastic buckets brimming with bright gems as we ran down the halls. How proud we were when Father took our offerings, dropped them in his 3-inch amber of Old Forester, while Mother rummaged in the suitcase for her bathing cap. Somewhere, getting gas in Colorado, they drove off without us, joking in stage lines that they thought we hiding heard. Oh, I wonder where those children are. They're so quiet in the back. Panicked, they returned and found my sister calmly counting pocket change as I stood small and troubled by the SO pulse, breathing the sharp, sweet fumes. Dinosaur Park in North Cedar Rapids, Corn Palace in South Dakota, Badlands, boring, on and on. At Yellowstone, we posed for photos by a sign that listed ours. Old Faithful would erupt. It felt like years, waiting for the geyser, rising, then subsiding with its tingling sulfur smell. The dog, off leash, had run to reach the bubbling hot spring's edge, then yelped and licked its paws. Disneyland, at last! The drawbridge entry, monorail, Tom Sawyer's cave, gators on the jungle cruise, natives passing in canoes. Snack bar at the Matterhorn, log ride down a flume. The heat, the whirling Alice teacups. At the Frontierland Saloon, real horses drank stale water from a trough. A sudden bang as bad guys robbed the bank. I got a holster, cap gun, caps, 6 rolls of paper tape with small red blisters, sprocket holes. Long winding lines to see Tomorrowland, parade on Main Street, pastel fireworks, dancing doors, Snow White and spotlight waving from the castle porch. Outside the grand and ghoulish entry to Toad Hall, I whined, I cried, I wailed. I didn't want to go on Mr. Toad's wild ride, whatever that was, but we had bought the tickets. As my father scowled They strapped me in a Model T. It wobbled. Steering wheel that turned, but didn't steer. As we were pulled along through gaslit London, under falling barrels, crashing through collapsing walls. And only mother's presence soothed my stifled sobs. We took the tram train to the parking lot. We couldn't find the car. We barely talked. I sleepwalked in the dark, but walked. Last question of this book kind of explores the boundaries and borders that we're sometimes called to cross, the often fraught liminal spaces that might be physical borders or encounters across race and class, or the difficult transitions of aging and mortality. So this last poem I'm going to read tonight is an elegy and also sort of a love poem. It's written in the voice of Robert Hollander, who was a Dante scholar and a really great teacher. And along with his wife, Jean Hollander, a poet, they co-translated Dante's Divine Comedy. So not surprisingly, there's some Dante allusions in this poem, and they're taken from the scene where Dante finally is reunited with his beloved Beatrice. But it's not the romantic scene you might imagine. When they meet finally, she really cuffs him around a bit. So this poem is called Revisiting, and it starts with an epigraph from a New York Times interview. The couple, co-translators of Dante's Divine Comedy, agreed that whoever lived longest would be free to revise the books. Mr. Hollander joked that the accord gave them both tremendous incentive to stay alive. Here's the poem, Revisiting. Well, you went first, and I was left, torn to pieces in the torrent, calling out, my Jean, Jean, Jean. Not a single drop of blood remained in me that did not tremble. I found myself that devastated spring, revisiting alone the loved, contested book of all our years. But then you kept returning, wafting up from onions glazed in olive oil, graceful and persistent, with the kitchen spiders that you used to usher out with cardboard and a plastic cup. In every stack of mail, you'd whisper, smoky irony, our address, Sourland, Hopewell, Hollow Zero that begins our zip. Tonight, your favorites, the fireflies, are out. At the leafy verge of our backyard, they fall and rise, arcing in their J-shaped flight. Cold light, the breathing dark. I try to catch the scent of it, this faint, this intimate, this pulse-like flickering. What is, what is, what is? The thickened grasses, fleeting shadows of our tame suburban gear, rusting wrought iron table, wicker chairs. The word I'm wanting, is it presence, absence, something that means both? The missing verb, let go or hold, or bless. You're trying to help, I guess. Still, the taste of such stern pity is a bitter taste. What is, what is, what is? Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. I sometimes read Cultural Daily, like not daily, but from time to time. and when I'm reading it, I come upon some writing by somebody I go, oh, I know her. Wow, that's so beautifully written. And so interesting. And I'm always interested in people who can write about a culture and other people's work, you know, as well as she does. Angel Ellis's writing has appeared on a theater marquee after winning Pittsburgh Filmmakers G20 Haiku Contest, and in over 70 journals and 17 anthologies. She's a staff writer for Cultural Daily. Her reviews were also featured in Al Jadid magazine and Vox Populi. Angel is the author of Arab on Radar, and her poems on her heritage won a fellowship from the Pennsylvania Council of the Arts. Spared is another of her books, and another one is Under the Kaufman's Clock, published by Six Gallery, a poetry flash fiction hybrid inspired by her adopted city of Pittsburgh with photographs by Rebecca Cleaver. Please welcome Angel Ellis.
Wow, it's so wonderful to be back reading in person with so many people I know and so many people I don't know, both virtually and in person. Joan, thank you for mentioning that. Yes, I do really enjoy attempting to grok the work of other poets and writers and to get to the essence of something. And I am going to be reviewing Rick's book for Vox Populi. And somehow the family journey that my family made years ago all the way to California might somehow get in there a little bit. So wonderful to be here tonight. The first of five poems I'm going to read, they're all fairly new, is both a historical poem and, in a weird way, kind of a pride poem. It's called Liberace in Pittsburgh. It was the day John Kennedy died, and Liberace was crying all the way to the Holiday House. Sequin star, at 44, the fair-haired boy adored by unloved mothers and their daughters. There was no show. Respect for the dead president. None for that other Lee, felled by a glistening ruby. He worked a shuttered dressing room, cleaning his sparkling costumes with carbona, known to TV repairmen and huffers, fire resistant and sweet as antifreeze. He was used to the fumes, like the buzz of a crowd. Next night, standing room only for Birth of the Blues on Twinkling Ivories, a dizzy Lee cut the concert short, collapsing backstage in a slick of his own vomit. They rushed him to St. Francis. He was there anyway, failing kidneys fluttering like birds in the saint's hand. While doctors shook their heads, sad metronomes, he ordered breakfast at Tiffany's, tubes of diamond glitter for his family and friends. Liberace was dying. But in that red brick house of pain, his childhood Catholic faith saved him. A gliding nun in white prayed to St. Anthony for something lost. His innocence, perhaps. She whispered his boyish name, Walter. No one ever knew who she was. The same crosses in Lawrenceville's St. Mary's Cemetery cheered for him in the oily rain of extreme unction. O Pittsburgh of miracles, O city of machines, O artificial kidney, alien angel, huge as a refrigerator, performing the magic trick. An inventive engineer irrigated the star in crude dialysis. Mid-December, a ghost pale Lee waved the sister's farewell from his Hollywood car. 20 years later, he played Heinz Hall, buoyed by a bevy of geriatric heads, mauve and cerulean like the clouds of Christian heaven, showered praise and cash on St. Francis Hospital, whose remodeled lobby flaunted his stagey name and his gleaming portrait, that all-American by way of Poland and Italy grin. Gone today. In the darkening days of St. Francis and Liberace's reputation, the nuns moved their idol's image to an obscure aisle. Where is he now? Buried in rubble? Or rising like a Las Vegas marquee in the rainbow pickup sticks that front children's Pittsburgh's Reborn Children's Hospital, shining gaily in his joy. This next poem is from my personal past. I'm Lebanese on my father's side, but Italian on my mother's. This is called Nights in the Old Country. Out of the paper mill village night she came. Mrs. Delhomme, my nonna's neighbor, small as a child, my size, in nightgown, robe, and slippers, thin, plaited hair, teeth taken out for sleep. My Joe, she lisped to Nonna, I'm running away from home. No one could blame her. Her daughter had a voice that blistered paint from Buick's. Nonna was kind. Would you like some ice cream, Mrs. Delhomme? Yes, my Joe. Nonna brought a Melmac bowl peaked with hills of chocolate, her garden in early spring. Like the old country, sighed Mrs. Delhomme, blessing Nonna's paradise with her whistling exhale. Once I thought the old country was one country spread behind a golden gate as in a fairy tale. By then, I knew the world was cut into nations, stained different colors on the classroom globe, but not that Nonna was dialing the kitchen phone. I hoped that she would make up a soft bed on her green couch for this old lady spooning ice cream past her bare gums in perfect pleasure. But Nonna took away the empty bowl, placed gentle fingers on the blue robe, walked her friend back through a sky thick with blinking stars, delivering her to the dark realm of Margaret. Decades gone, Nonna spoke of Mrs. Delhomme. I loved her like she was my own mother. I know, I said, through Nonna's fading kitchen, the percolator clock above her sink pulsing a pure red light into the shadows, holding that present until it too became memory. You know, sometimes people will ask poets, did that really happen? And I think of poems as things that sort of really happened, but of course, because they are fictions, you get to change them a little bit. This brings me forward several years. It's called Blue Roses. I'm 13 in Vicky Lander's bedroom, looking at the box of Kotex stamped with a blue rose on her French provincial dresser. Putting one between my legs would be as ridiculous as the training bra my mother has forced me into. 28 AAA, the smallest size available, tight as a bandage against a dry wound. My reflection reveals what looks like a bespectacled 10-year-old against the budding blonde blur of Vicky, who's dancing to Here Comes the Sun on her stereo, wearing a snug striped sweater and jeans. I'm only Vicky's neighborhood friend, the one she can summon from down the street with a ring from the princess phone that tingles with calls from boys. The one whose stunted presence allows Vicky's mother to convince herself that Vicky is as innocent as the frosted pink lipstick she is allowed to wear when she leaves the house. Her mother smothers all thought of Vicky wiping off that virginal shade for something luscious, blood red, smoothing her lips for indescribable kisses. This next to last one is short, but it's of the same era as Blue Roses, if anyone remembers the commercials for Ginsu knives, and it's called Ginsu. I wanted my knife to saw through 2x4s, slice tomatoes into bloody strips of paper, a blade glowing bright in stale television moonlight, an edge biting every scripted line. No ferric oxide on my tongue, only a keen sales pitch with promises of cleaving. But wait, there's more. All the old people are laughing, and all the young people are like, what the heck is a Ginsu knife? Look it up on YouTube. Okay, my final poem of the night, happily for me, was a finalist in the 2021 Jack Grape's Poetry Contest, which is judged anonymously and appeared in Cultural Daily. It's called Self-Portrait as Wine Glass, with an epigraph from the immortal Jane Kenyon. It even comes to the wine glass, weary of holding wine. Jane Kenyon, Happiness. What am I but bones of sand and heat, blown breath for cooling, hardened bubble cut and soldered to stem, outline of tulip durable, fearing accident or storm more than change of season. Shiver of music, clink of shell to shell, vibrating rim. What am I but liquor quicker than form's imperceptible trickle? Pale wheat gold, wetted garnet, stain of pink rosé, worn by hands that clutch and claim, ghost prints and smeared caresses. Still life with echoes, after guests desert a littered table. What am I but graceful shadow on a book cleft to spine, shading words we loved so much that years after parting, they twined us in ether, skywriting across the distant blue, hoping happiness has come to you too. What am I but begging bowl, inebriated merely by being, as juices fill me to the brim. Once, holding an ice chip ring, promise fish-like scrap to feed a hollow, thirsting heart. Be your own light, a dying Buddha told the tear-dimmed crowd. What am I but shimmer of celebration and concupiscence, consecrated by daybreak and candle, bar glow and sunset, icebox bulb and hotel transom, mouthfuls of down stars. From weariness, joy rises, froth of unexpected prisms. Thank you.
Concerned that we might have had a little technical slip up, but apparently not. Good. All right. Thank you, Angel. Yay. I'm going to remind you all, we do have books for sale tonight. Just a reminder. So as part of the Greater Pittsburgh Festival Books, I think it was called, I had my first chance to hear
Danielle Obisi Orlu, Reed, along actually, she was there with Toy Derek Father Celeste Ganey, and it was a fabulous conversation and poetry reading. It was really special, and just I was really happy about that. And I'm glad so many people were there to hear her, and so many people here to hear her tonight, all of you, and plus our Zoom friends. Danielle Obisi Orlu is a Nigerian American student, actress, and poet who grew up in Johannesburg, South Africa. She is the Youth Poet Laureate of Allegheny County 2021-22. A program of City of Asylum. She is a trained public speaker, as you will see, receiving accolades in speech, drama, and debate. She attends the University of Pittsburgh and is, I love this, is double majoring in international and area studies and political science with minors in sociology and French. Yes, yes. She is devoted to fostering environments of intersectional community belonging and empowerment. She is passionate about migration, belonging, and international human rights law. And without further ado here, I should mention that she is working to empower migrant youth and refugee voices and is a student leader, as you might imagine, on her campus. Please welcome Danielle Obisi Orlu.
Good evening, everybody. I'm very bad at these mic things, and I always think I'm going to break it, and I never know which way to turn it. So let's hope that works. So thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for being here. Thank you to White Whale, thank you to Hemingway, and thank you to City of Asylum. As always, this is one of my very last performances as Youth Poet Laureate. So a bit emotional and special for me. And as always, just thank you again for coming. I have a few poems, and I think some of them are tied into, you know, growing up in South Africa. Some of them are tied to being here in Pittsburgh. The first poem is called My City in Time, and that is a dedication to the city I was raised in, Johannesburg, and the city I chose, Pittsburgh. So, My City in Time. Connection is the key to human existence. It is one's hands reaching out beyond current resistance. Today, my city is a cracked vase, fearful of its withering influence. Tomorrow, it will be filled with light that shines in never-ending brilliance. My city, you see, is tattooed behind my eyelids, an afterimage of an array of lights, life and bridges. Behind these eyes lies a city waiting to be crafted in our image, a dream of a paradise lost, a paradise yet to be given. What is our city? But stones to which we give importance, a place of solitude and community, a fortress unwilling to submit to seizure of any kind. What is it but a manifestation of pride and progress in tandem with pain and pursuit, lest our city be left to ruins? Behind these eyes lies a city made to last, a home of sustainability and a hub of innovation. My city carries itself with the esteem of antiquity, a reminder that life cannot be lived in the lenses of the past. My city, you see, is time itself, a promise to remain ever-changing at best, and at worst, a reflection of the life that we have created. Thank you. This next poem I wrote, and I grew up in South Africa, so we use British English, and the question I get asked all the time is, are you British? And I'm like, no, I sound perfectly American in South Africa, And here I am British. It's been the strangest thing because I was just like, okay, when I go back to the US, I'll be American. And they're just like, no, you're not. So this is an ode to growing up in an Anglophone country and really what it means to then have this accent in my mouth. Oxford's comma. Okay, we're doing both phone and paper. It works. Learn to speak English the way I speak it. Let the letters dance on your tongue in tune. Cleanse your palate of your language born. Submit. My English wants to see no traces. Crash land your courage on these jagged rocks. My invitation was not made to empower. Erase your history. Your home, long forgotten, erase your history and stand recreated in mine. I want to see no trace of that mother on your tongue. My Oxford comma is law. Praise the boats on which I came, celebrate my standard. You and I are not the same. You may have mastered it, but you are subject to my language. There is civilization in this punctuation. I have saved you from a nonsensical refrain. These are the things that were told, and their bullets raged like run-on sentences. These are the stories of old. Ironic, isn't it, that the most violent war is one of words. Thank you. And on a completely different note is a love poem to myself. I grew up, or I chose Pittsburgh, and I really think this youth poet laureate ship chose me. I was able to go from being like, okay, I'm in university now, I'm an academic, as you heard from all of my majors and minors, and then really grow up in it and grow into being a 20-year-old, now almost 21-year-old, who is writing poetry and doing international affairs and really dedicating herself to herself. So this is a poem entitled After 20 Years or Glorious. I am not afraid to be alone anymore. It has come to be a gentle embrace. I now linger in the meantime. With no intention of seeking its end, I bask and bathe within it. Blessed, teary-eyed, drenched in the stardust memories, my romantic heart, sure, unsure, learning that love does not need a map to navigate what is internal. Elated and present within it, Helios has dragged awakening across the sky of my spirit, unwilling to rest. Undeterred, the stars of longing and past still burn in this consciousness. But my desire to live so fully in service of my heart, with my soul in an orbit of self-realization, where I welcome the unknown with eclipse of lightness and laughter, it burns relentlessly behind my eyes. I am no longer seduced by the promise of another. My happiness bringer, my light bearer, my one who sees, those remain ever existing within me. But it is not the fairy tale that I yearn. A story threaded together by the magic unknown and a trauma unrevealed. There is no pumpkin carriage transfiguration at midnight. I yearn to reacquaint myself with the honor of openness, the intimacy of one, the beauty of soulness, the sunlight of self. It does not always feel right, and I am not always ready to exist as just an extension of myself. But I can no longer search for love in brokenness. Aware of the grief in choosing the good that serves you, bidding farewell to babysitting bad behavior, cradling chronic carelessness, I stand as worth too much, as glorious. Today, I am breathless in the sight of myself, in the embrace of my own arms, already in love. Thank you. So I've debated doing these two. So I'm going to check time and see how much time I have. But there is one I have. I'm one of five, an eldest brother, and then with four girls, and I am the baby. So you can imagine in our household, there's a lot of, you took my clothes. No, I didn't. And I'm going to do it. And it is a long, long conversation of what it means to raise four girls in community with one another. And this is an ode. It's called SSID. And it is an acronym of my sister's names. And it's Sharon, Shalom, Emanuela, and Danielle. That is Danielle's on to me. But this is for my sisters. And I was just back home in South Africa, so I'm a bit tired and jet lagged because I got in 2 days ago. And I love them. And I have never written a poem for them or performed it for them. So this is for them. And I'll show them later. In sisterhood, I have learned to shapeshift. With an eye for understanding beauties, my sisters are a rainforest. Our laughter drizzling down one moment, and then the next, a joke gone too far, has thunder sprinting through the air. A forest of our friendship is quiet with, shh, no, no, don't cry, you're fine, just don't tell mom we're fine. My sisters and I were spies. We parasailed through discomfort and roundhouse kicked misogyny and patriarchy in the ass. My sisters were crackers of the code, how to say no. Not now, and not ever, and definitely not in that tone. My sisters knew how to love like a jazz band and a gospel choir, all at once spiritual. Where the only direction of your soul blossoming is upwards during midnight kitchen deliberations. My sisters build their monuments and promise each other to be more. My sisters and I, we argue. As sisters do, I steal her clothes. She says I'm annoying. I tell mom, a cycle made just for us. My sisters and I speak mountains out of pebbles and life into empty spaces in sisterhood. I have seen that each of these women, a manifestation of a dream so dear to me, I dare not open my eyes. But then I hear them calling to me and asking, why am I never on time? And the car is ready to go. So in sisterhood, I shapeshift once more, despairing the day I will leave them behind, ever present and cascading memories. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Now before we go any further, Harad, we have a mystery. Whose water is up here? Does anybody remember who belongs to this water? Because I don't want somebody else to come up here and drink it. Just, you know, just checking, okay? The hygiene police has spoken here. Okay, so this has been just an amazing evening of poetry. I'm really happy you were all here. Now, a big hello again to all of you on Zoom world. I want to remind you, before I introduce Don Wentworth, which I am going to do, I want to remind the poets that you're not allowed to leave till we take the group photo, which is very important, and that the reading will be up, I hope, on the Hemingway's Summer Series blog pretty soon, so you can hear some of this again. One of the most beloved poets in Pittsburgh is John Wentworth, who is a Pittsburgh-based poet whose work reflects his interest in the revelatory nature of grief,
read haiku-like moments of everyday life. His haiku gazelles and Tanaka have appeared in journals and anthologies, including, as you might guess, Modern Haiku, but also Gargoyle, Frog Pond, Chiron Review, and Rolling Stone. Okay, woo. Six Gallery Press published three full-length poetry collections of Mr. Wentworth. They are Past All Traps, Yield to the Willow, and With a Deepening Presence. He collaborated with the British poet Joy McCall on a Tan Renga sequence, touching the now, and 27 Sparrows, a haiku. I just try to visualize this. A haiku. Oh, I thought this said haiku cookbook before. I was very confused. I was trying to. Okay. A haiku chapbook is a. you know, Trina used to do this. It was just like, you know, remember, rabbits in the air. Just that's a joke. We'll come back to that. Okay. 27. He has a wonderful job. Called 27. I give up. Please welcome Don Wentworth.
Well, that's the best introduction ever. If that wasn't confusing enough, I have another chapbook with 27 poems called A Passing Breeze, and I'm going to feature that in the reading tonight. So there's going to be some haiku-like things and a couple of ghazals, and we'll be out of here quickly. I'd like to start out with a PSA for everybody, because, you know, when you do a reading, you should have a PSA in the beginning. Just remember, poetry is a victimless crime. Let yourself be. A nature poem. Shimmering in the spider web. Emptiness. And this is a city haiku. Wrapped around the bowing daffodil, yellow caution tape. This poem recently was published in Modern Haiku, and it's a great illustration of what a haiku should do. Two parts that either clash or come together, and the third thing happens in the listener's or the reader's mind. So, sun shaft in mist, some comfort too in doubt. Cherry blossoms in Eastern culture represent transience. Fading beneath the fading cherry blossoms, cherry blossom viewers. This next one is about the fraught relationship between fathers and sons. When I thought about titling this chapbook Passing Breeze, I briefly thought about calling it Absent Father Day. No possessives there, no plurals. Here you go. He says, the best part of you ran down my leg. Father's Day. Yeah. This is a environmental echo kind of haiku. Thumbprint on the Buddha's butt. Invasive humans. This is one of my current favorites. They change every day. One by one, our elders pass. Elm, chestnut, you. This is a found poem, and there's a lot of them out there. Just keep your eyes open. This was at the entrance to Allegheny Cemetery on Butler Street this year. Memorial Day billboard. Follow the parade into the cemetery. And this was at the farmer's market. Eating Cheetos at the farmer's market. The farmer's son. All right. I love birds, sparrows in particular. Sparrow screeching on the wire. Spoilers. And one more haiku and then a ghazal. This one is for the artist, poet, and friend, Ed Baker, who passed away. Spring evening, another death, another moon. And a ghazal. It's a Middle Eastern form, Persian, number of stanzas that sort of don't seem related and then maybe are related, and who knows. This one I've never done anywhere before, so have patience. It's called Orpheus Reimagined. 10 plagues, Moses? Why not gifts instead? Anthracite, a tear, second sight, basil, 10 precepts, 3 wishes, a breath, eucalyptus, a staff, forgiveness? Whether a shell game or a 3-card Monty, the prophet knows the truth. Let's just core the shell. Our hands are made for so many lovelier tasks. The best Cocteau could do was imagine the underworld in slow motion. Imagine what Orphée imagined. A silver mirror rippling in the breeze? When was the last time you received a gift like the one Prometheus gave? 2 sticks, flint, some tinder, and Donald, a poem to set the world on fire? Friends, the curls of his hair are chain links that bind us here, soft, tender, delicate tendrils that are made for wine, for love, and yes, forgetfulness. Say jawbone of an ass, and everyone cracks up. Even blind Samson gets it. Stop worshiping at the temple. It's time to make this donkey world bray. I got lost. Where was I? Ah, here we are. So a few more haiku, one more ghazal, and one more haiku, and then we're out of here. This first poem, the title for my third collection came from this poem. Somehow the poem didn't make it into the third collection. There you go. Hitting my shoulder with a deepening presence, a white hair petal. And another father-son piece. My father's nose, his hands, his anger, my denial. I don't quite know what to say about this particular piece, except, I don't know, every time I read it, I think about classic rock. Long in the leg, short in the crotch, Tuesday afternoon. Insect poem. How still the praying mantis while praying. And this is for the Pittsburgh poet, Bart Solarchik. Hopefully he's out there watching. Once again, giving me the stink eye, Mr. Crow. And an autumn poem. With falling leaves in the late afternoon, we too be coming. And another sort of found poem, auto-correcting each time it's typed. Zen. Really? Okay, last is all. This is one that I have done previously. Actually, you know what? I'm going to do one more poem before that, and then I'll do this all. This is, Lori and I recently signed up for natural burial out in Penwoods. And this came from there. We sign up for a natural burial. Finally, committed. All right, so the gazelle, and then one poem. And the gazelle is entitled Sharing a Rug. And I wanna say thank you to Joan and to Chris and White Whale, obviously. And every time I come up here, I think of Jimmy. And thank you for bringing him up when we were talking. And so to him, and especially for the poets that I was reading with tonight, this poem, and all the poets that have been in this particular series, this poem means a lot to me, and it's for them. It's called Sharing a Rug. There will come a day when we are heading out to the woods one last time. It may seem a little brighter, a tad sharper, a bit more joyful, but it'll come anyway. Before he saw the bush burn without being consumed, Moses killed a man, an evil man. Still, it was murder. Back in the day, there was no debating capital punishment. Somewhere near the verge at twilight, the sun and moon poised just so. We'll realize our mistake. We won't head back. We need to get this right. Turning the staff into a serpent, the river into blood, causing a rain of frogs, all this Pharaoh's magicians did also. Was this a deep truth for Moses or only for us? Friends. Every day for a month, a huge crow sat in the sycamore across the way. At first light, the din was monstrous, a call for death, murder, revenge. Of course, crow also speaks. Wentworth, in our lives, we must stitch these stanzas together, seemingly unrelated, yet vibrant in color. Lyrical in tone. Come, share my rug. Drink. Let's sing each other's song. And thanks. I wasn't going to do this one, but I'm going to do it anyway. This actually happened, and I'm going to hold this here as if it's a prop. At the gravesite, Siri says, "I'm sorry, I don't understand." That happened. I was there. And one last poem. Half empty bowl sitting at my feet. Did I take or give? Thank you very much.
I want to thank you all for reading tonight. It was just magnificent. It was an amazing evening of poetry. Or as Jimmy would have said, you have honored poetry. Thank you so much. We will be back in 2 weeks with Anastasia Walker, Megan Tudelo, Judith Robinson, Bob Padgett, and Natchez. That is not next week. That is July the 26th, a Tuesday. Hope to see you here or there, Zoom world. And again, thank you to Anna, Halsey, and everyone at White Whale who made this possible for us. And let's really support this bookstore. Come in, drink some coffee, buy some books. This has been extraordinarily great for the community to have them here, particularly in these years. Thank you so much. See you soon.